Welcome to Monday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm your host, Dave Allen. Looking for Melody to join us a little later on. Quite busy today with the markets stirring as they have been. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Monday, February 3rd, 2020. Thanks in advance to our producer and engineer, Todd. Let's get started with the market report. In the precious metals market, tough day for gold as people taking some profits. Some other things going on that we'll talk about a little bit later in the program. Gold down, spot gold down $12 to $1,577 an ounce. Silver down 2%, 38 cents at $17.73. Platinum rose today 1%, $10 to $973. And palladium back on the up path, up a little over a percent, $26 to $2,366 per ounce. Now, in the oil markets, bear with me one momentum, please. We're seeing here, now bear with me, sorry about this. Last I look, both domestic and international oil was down. And in fact, domestic was down almost 3%, in fact, down to $50.05. Lowest in some time, ladies and gentlemen. Brent, international Brent crude, on the other hand, down a whopping 4%, over $2 a barrel, down to $54.32. The CBO VIX Volatility Index, that was down today earlier when I looked at it. Give me a minute for that to come up, and I'll tell you where that is now. Down 4% at 18.08. And the Fear and Greed Index, that hit a low today, putting it into the fear category earlier when I looked at it. It looks like it's up a little bit now at 46. That's a neutral rating. That's up 2 points from the previous close of 44, and way down more than 50% from a month ago when it was at 93, showing extreme greed. So investors actually feeling the gyrations of the market recently. In the good old paper markets, some rebounding today from Friday's dramatic nosedive. Dow Jones up about 144 points to 28,400, we'll say. Broader S&P 500 up 23.40 to 32.49. And finally, NASDAQ up 1.3%, 122 plus to 9,273. In the Treasury markets, they were mixed today. Yeah, it looks as though they're largely up today, but the bellwether 10-year yield fairly flat. We'll call it 1.52. The 2-year up slightly, 0.02 percent to 1.355, and the long-term 30-year note slightly down. We'll call it flat at 3.0. I heard some movement there. Is that you, Melody?
Yes, it is. Yes,
greetings.
It is.
Greetings. How are you?
We're just greetings.
Finishing the market report. One thing I did fail to mention was the U.S. dollar, which I believe, bear with me, ladies and gentlemen, they keep moving these around for us.
97.84.
97.84. That's up about 0.46 from Friday. So there you have it, the DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody Cedarstrom is in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Bring it down. Yay. How are you doing today?
Doing good, thanks.
Super. Well, gorgeous, you know, there's... Pardon?
Gorgeous day out there. Trying to get out and open up pores. Get some vitamin D.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. It's a beautiful day. Not as warm as what they were calling, but pretty, 60 degrees in February, right after the old groundhog was out there telling us what was going on. And, you know, heaven forbid, PETA wants us to have a robot groundhog. Oh, it's just like, oh, my gosh, what else is new, ladies and gentlemen? But anyway, I hope you're all warm where you're at. Hope you're having some great weather. And, you know, the big story, Dave, over the past, you know, couple of weeks, of course, has been the virus in China. And it's funny now that now China is going to criticize the U.S. And then they accused us of setting a very bad example when it comes to tackling the fast-spreading coronavirus outbreak. They said that the administration, the president administration, is spreading fear instead of providing much-needed assistance. A ministry spokesperson said it's unreasonable for the countries around the world to try to prevent people from crossing borders. And, of course, they singled out the U.S., and they said we're spreading panic. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. I don't know which is worse, a government that doesn't tell you anything like China, or at least where we get to talk about it. And talking about it doesn't necessarily means we're spreading fear, or, you know, fear is being spread. It's a discussion and an awareness that people can take precautions and, you know, to prevent any major other outbreaks like China is having. So I'm not quite sure why China, you know, can criticize the U.S. and they want assistance. They want, they're complaining because they haven't, because the U.S. government hasn't provided any substantive assistance.
Well, you know, they can criticize, and they're going to. And what that tells me is that the leadership over there, be it Xi Jinping or certain deputies in the provinces, are telling people in the party that this is not good, that the quarantine and the shutting down of travel in and out of the region surrounding the Wuhan province, it's got to be wreaking havoc now. Saw pictures of the 1,000-person hospital that has gone up in less than a week's time. It is pretty amazing in terms of ingenuity in that respect. But look, I mean, the China confirmed over 17,000 cases of the virus in the country now, and 361 deaths. And that was this morning, China time. Essentially, another day has gone. I haven't looked at the updated cases. But it has surpassed the outcome of the SARS epidemic in 2002 and 2003. Late last week, Donald Trump signed an order temporarily barring entry to foreign nationals who had traveled to China within the previous 2 weeks. But Australia, Italy, Japan, Pakistan, mm-hmm. Russia, and Singapore announced similar restrictions. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has advised against imposing such measures, warning that travel restrictions can cause more harm than good. They said, in a globalized world, the destinies of all countries are closely linked, emphasizing, similar to their Chinese ministries, that the U.S. decision to impose travel restrictions could create and spread panic throughout the world.
Oh, good grief. Yeah, but other countries are doing similar situations, but we're just the only ones that are signaled out, of course. All right. It's, you know, it just really is kind of interesting. And, of course, we're not deliberately creating any type of panics. And, of course, I saw...
Information here is a good thing.
It is. I have a client, lives in Hawaii, married a Chinese woman, and they visit China regularly. And that was a year ago that they were over there for a long period of time. And he had asked me, he called me from China, and we talked, and he wanted to know what was going on and so forth. And we started talking about, he says, you know, he says, for us to get news over here, what you know today, it will take us 2-3 weeks or longer to get the same news if we get it. So that's how news is filtered through and sent, you know, in China. And their markets opened up after the their New Year's celebration. Well, I guess they didn't celebrate, but their Lunar Year, New Year, whatever you want to call it. And I saw, Dave, that their stock market dropped 8%.
Yeah, it was pretty pronounced, and that comes on top of a couple of 2+% days last week. Now, that's what I call a significant correction.
Well, I mean, there's more and more experts that are warning about that this could cause the recession, just like we've been talking about.
Well, it's true. One in particular, Stephen Roach, talks about it creating literal havoc on the global economy. He was in China during the SARS epidemic, and he says potential fallout could be worse now because growth is already in a danger zone. Specifically, the former Morgan Stanley Asia Group chair said that big shocks for weak economies that don't have cushions to withstand them could lead to unexpected recessions. Even though Roach believes Chinese officials are taking more aggressive action to fight the coronavirus than the SARS outbreak, he cautions there could still be problems for months. It's a frightening outbreak, especially when it spreads this fast, said Roach, who's now teaching at Yale. So far, let's see, what did I just read? There are 151 cases in 23 countries outside of China, Melody.
Well, you know, and it's kind of, you know, he also suggests that, you know, if they manage to contain this, that, of course, the economic impact would be limited. Well, yeah, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. But certainly it's interesting to see the comparison with SARS and the rapid speed of which is following. And I've seen some numbers on the manufacturing and everything in China. We all know China's been slowing down anyway. So this will just add a little more damper to any of their projections, I guess, of their output for 2020. So, and again, this is just something we just have to kind of monitor from day to day, week to week, just to see how far this goes. But it is kind of something to pay attention to. There's no need to panic, but you pay attention to it. And the recent phase one trade deal between Beijing and Washington could suffer some collateral damage if this spread of the coronavirus causes prolonged demand disruption. China did commit to an 83.3% increase in imports of manufactured goods from the U.S. in 2021 versus 2017, and a prolonged demand interruption could make, you know, delivering those targets just a little more difficult. Now, a lot of these comments come as China does battle trying to contain this virus outbreak, and we certainly see that since the city of Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak. You know, we've seen the authorities place multiple cities in the province under partial or even complete lockdown, Dave.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, Wuhan and the surrounding region are major manufacturing hubs. A lot of them work with American firms. An analysis of shipment data shows over 450 U.S. importers are supplied by companies located in the Hubei province, where Wuhan is located. Also importantly, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here in the States said there's currently no evidence that the virus can be transmitted through imported goods from China. While a lot remains unknown about the new virus, coronaviruses are generally often spread by respiratory droplets. That's according to the CDC, who added that there haven't been any cases of the new virus in the U.S. that's associated with imported products.
I was trying to find, I saw about bankruptcies as the agriculture was an important part of the phase one trade deal. And my computer's a little frozen and so forth. It might take a little bit to bring it up, but we'll try to do that during break. We'll be heading in there here shortly in just a few seconds. But manufacturing sort of did a little bit, and this is good news. Had a little bit of a rebound in January after shrinking for five straight months. And there was a little bit of a surge in new orders. So, of course, that makes everyone a little more hopeful that maybe things are going to turn around in that area, and that maybe business and investment will or could have bottomed out. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about farmers when we come back from the break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you know, we said we're going to talk a little bit about the farmers. Of course, some of them are beginning to celebrate the passage of the USMCA and, of course, the signing of a Phase 1 U.S.-China trade deal. But you know what? There's still a lot of them out there that are facing a crisis. According to USA or U.S. Courts data, the U.S. farm bankruptcy rates increased by 20% in 2019. That was an eight-year high. There were a total of 595 Chapter 12 bankruptcies filed by family farmers. And a lot of the bankruptcies have been on the dairy side of life. There have been a lot of mitigating impacts going on there. And Wisconsin, the heart of dairy industry, saw 57 farm bankruptcies, its highest level in a decade. Over the past 15 years, there's been about a 49% decrease. A 49% decrease in the number of dairy farms in the state. Wow. That's an incredible number. And between 2016 and 2018, Wisconsin lost almost 1,200 dairy farms. Milk prices have been low for a number of years. And when you think about the capital requirements to run an operation, small and medium-sized dairy operations find themselves with large amounts of, ladies and gentlemen, debt. So several years of the lower commodity prices and larger amounts of debt, you know, what are you going to have? Bankruptcies. And you know, in 2014, there were record high milk prices, and dairy farmers in the U.S. expanded output. Farmers around the world expanded output. And now it's kind of like in a hangover, 4 to 5 year hangover, trying to get rid of excess supply. And this is what happens. It's the same thing that's going to happen with government. That's no different. Even though we'll see little bits and pieces of good news, just like seeing manufacturing rebound in January, because it's after it was shrinking for five straight months. And this was the Institute for Supply Management said today that its index of national factory activity increased to a reading of 50.9. This is the highest level since January. December, July. It was 40.
Mm. Hmm? It's the highest level since last July, I believe.
Since last July. And December, it was 47.8. So, Dave, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a relatively modest mm-hmm. increase after the 5 months of decreasing levels. I hope they're not talking. I mean, we already hear it posturing in terms of a prolonged slump in business investment bottoming out. I think it'll take at least two more months of positive growth to be able to say something like that with a straight face. And certainly several more months, I believe, in order to say that manufacturing in the United States is beginning to rebound. So I think we just need more time to see how things in across the globe progress, Melody.
Well, you know, we were talking about the trade agreements, the USMCA, and I think there's a little-known sunset provision in there. And not a lot of people's been talking. I'm sure there's a lot of things in there that people aren't noticing or reading or talking about. But there is a sunset provision in there. And this I did not know, and it is a first-of-its-kind provision designed to ensure that, unlike NAFTA, USMCA won't become outdated, unbalanced, and politically unpopular over the time. Under the sunset provision, the agreement will terminate automatically in 16 years unless all three countries affirmatively agree to an extension in the interim. The parties will hold a joint review every 6 years to evaluate how the agreement is working and hopefully agreed on needed updates and adjustments. Well, that sounds like a good idea, Dave.
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah. If and more legislation ought to contain that type of provision, if after that process plays out and all parties agree to an extension, the term of the agreement will reset for another 16 years. If they can't agree, UMSCA won't disappear right away, but a 10-year termination clock will start to tick. As the expiration date approaches, pressure will build on the parties to resolve their differences. The goal of the sunset provision is not to encourage UMSCA's early demise, but to ensure that the agreement will continue to serve America's interests over the long run in a highly competitive and always evolving global economy. It's important to the U.S. try and retain whatever leverage we can in all of our trade and relationships, mainly to prevent unfair trade practices, as well as market distortions, and correct them when they do occur.
But 26 years in total, I mean, it's, you know, it gives the agreement a chance to, you know, they won't be changing it immediately and so forth. So, yeah, that's a great little thing. Well, you know, we have our newsletter is going to be published today. And, Dave, you wrote an article. I've been talking for years and years and years about there's no affordable housing in this country. And it is a big, big problem. And for various reasons, many different reasons. And you write today about how Americans simply can't afford rent.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, this could go so much in depth in any number of directions. But to summarize what our thinking is to start here. A growing number of Americans simply can't afford to pay their rent, as rental property prices hit a record high. That's according to researchers who make these claims amid an outcry over rising evictions and homelessness throughout the country. The number of U.S. households living in rentals also surged to roughly 44 million in 2018. That's up 21% from 4 years earlier. And that is according to a study by Harvard University. The numbers come as a growing share of older and larger families in particular can no longer afford to buy their own homes. This is like nothing we've ever seen. That's Whitney Airgood Obricki, who's the study's lead author, pointing to the rising number of households who are cost burden, in her words, those that spend more than 30% of their income on housing.
You know, according to that report, you write that 21 million U.S. renters are cost burden.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? I mean, that accounts for almost half of all renters in both urban and rural areas across the country. Airgood Obricki, who works for Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies, added, when we talk about cost burden, this could become the new normal.
And it's just not here in this country, Dave. Isn't it global?
Well, it is. So says the World Bank. According to their research, they're finding that only affordable rentals in most fast-growing developed countries were insecure and came with poor living conditions. About 65% of the U.S. population are homeowners, according to federal statistics, with most of the rest of the 35% in rentals. Since the 2008 recession, caused in part, we know, by a wave of homeowners being unable to repay their mortgages, the number of cost-burden renters has risen by almost 3 million. And those people are forced to make difficult trade-offs, often on a monthly basis. Some have to cut back on health care to pay for the rent, or they might miss a rent payment. But that could trigger eviction or homelessness, especially if it happens a couple of months in a row. High-income renters have flooded the U.S. market, having either lost their homes or just being unable to afford to buy in the first place. And that has led to higher rents, the lowest vacancy rate since the mid-80s, and a spurt of rental construction that's tailored to all of that.
Well, they pointed out that households earning at least $75,000 per year accounted for three quarters of the growth in renters since 2010. So that equals out to about 3.2 million. My question there, if 75,000 per year accounted for three quarters and half of the renters, so there's a large amount of people who make $75,000 that fall into this category too.
Well, what it tells me, and I don't believe the study looked at it at this particular thing, but what I, and this is, I'll call it a somewhat educated guess, that those people who make 75K or more a year have a lot of debt.
Yeah.
That a good chunk of their income is going to pay down that debt. And so it's leaving them cash poor, unable to afford certainly to buy a house, and in some cases to rent. I mean, property prices for rental apartments have reached record highs, rising 150% between 2010 and late last year. Diane Yentl, who's chief executive of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, said, in the past decade, the lowest income renters have seen a loss of more than 2 million apartments that are affordable to them and experienced increased evictions. The Harvard report makes clear that the housing crisis is most acute for the lowest income renters. Millions of poor people who are eligible for housing subsidies haven't received help, as federal rental assistance programs have only grown by about 1.5% per year in recent years, according to the report. My fear, Melody, is that as the global economy continues going south, especially if there's a triggering event that forces it to drop quickly, more and more people won't be able to afford their monthly rents or mortgages. And that could result in a growing number of evictions, bad credit reports, renters not being able to afford to buy a house, young people moving back in with their parents, old people moving in with their kids. In short, a major economic and social upheaval, if not malaise. And that will lead to a vicious cycle that could further send our economy into a downward spiral and send our lifestyles back years or even decades. In my mind, private sector has to provide a lot more better paying jobs. The government has to provide the tax and regulatory frameworks that will facilitate just that. So again, rest of the article you can read if you subscribe to American Survival and our weekly blog that typically comes out Fridays.
You know, we've seen oil prices. They were running up there for a while when you had the Saudis looking to run their IPO. They were trying to get it running up with all the talk with Iran and everything like that. Oil prices started to take off, Dave, but now they're beginning to fall. And they're trying to, a lot of the world's largest oil producers are trying to, they're scrambling to stem a sharp fall in these prices. And, of course, the coronavirus epidemic will do a double hit with demand from China. We know that China is the world's biggest importer. So it's, you know, you had officials from OPEC this weekend, even with Russia. They agreed to meet tomorrow and Wednesday in Vienna. We know that that's where OPEC has its quarters. And the big producers are going to be discussing whether to schedule an emergency ministerial level meeting later this month, moving up a gathering plan for early March. And so they're absolutely trying to put a floor under these prices. And the price of Brent crude, the international benchmark, that has fallen more than 15% over the last month.
Yeah, I mean, that plunge, some people are saying, has undercut the impact of that carefully orchestrated production cut that OPEC announced in December at its meeting in Vienna. Now, whether OPEC will succeed in stemming the price falls, particularly soon, seems doubtful. One analyst said that China was already reducing its orders for March from Saudi Arabia, who we know is the de facto leader of OPEC and the world's largest oil exporter. China, who's Saudi Arabia's most important customer, and along with other Asian countries like India and South Korea, is increasingly seen as being vital for the big oil producers around the Persian Gulf. Any slowing of these economies will further sap demand for oil, hitting prices and the revenues that OPEC governments have come to depend on since the 1970s.
Well, the next topic that we wanted to talk about, but we only have a couple minutes to, and it's a rather lengthy discussion. Maybe we ought to save it for Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Because it is a good topic, and it's about Medicare. And we know they have to address these issues. Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, they have to address these issues. These areas are becoming bankrupt. We all know it. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to even talk about possible solutions. And certainly in a time when you have candidates that are offering free everything, and we all were born and raised, there is no such thing as a free ride.
What?
Well, I know. How bad? Gee whiz. Come on.
But they said that. They're not leveling with us?
Oh, boy. So it is important, just for topics, ideas, and things. So when you hear other people talk about it and everything, you can say, no, that's not true. That's not going to work. And it's a great way to, because the younger population, they're the ones that are truly embracing all this free stuff. And just to tell them that it doesn't work isn't going to change their minds. So anyway, we'll talk about that into a little bit deeper, a little more thought on Wednesday. We're heading into a break right now. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Oh, won't you tell me again? Tell me again tonight.
Each and every food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And there's all kinds of things going on. And you know, on Friday, it kind of irritated me. I did the market report, and I kept looking. They just, it used to be right at the top of the hour. It didn't change anymore. That was the number. It was frozen in time. And I gave a number going into, it was almost five after when I gave those numbers on Friday, Dave.
Yes.
And I went back and looked, and it went down more. It really did close over 600 points on Friday. And it kind of irritated me, because they had to change those numbers after, you know, everybody else gave out the numbers, because there's news stations all across the country that gave out the report.
I wondered myself where your numbers came from. I was like, guess I was looking at an unupdated 4 o'clock number.
Well, I always update, you know.
I know.
And it's just so, isn't technology grand?
Timing's everything.
It is. So for you listeners, no, I haven't lost my mind and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted to, does that matter? No, but I like to be accurate. I like to be correct. And I like to be true. This is interesting. Last week, the House of Representatives approved two measures to restrict the president's ability to go to war with Iran. And one of the measures would block funding for any use of offensive military force in or against Iran without congressional approval. The other would repeal the 2002 resolution that authorized military force against the Hussein regime in Iraq, and has since been invoked by successive presidents pursuing fights against new enemies in that past also. So we've seen these tensions between our country and Iran. And of course, the earlier last month, you had the Soleimani, top Iranian military official, get whacked. Lack of a better term right now for a Monday. So, you know, we've seen some retaliations, and, you know, I don't think this is over. I think it just went to page 6 of the newspaper, but I don't think, although, Dave, I don't know how many, we reported on the numbers last week on how many soldiers, troops went to Germany because of major head injuries due to the retaliation from Iran. It wasn't just headaches. It was something a lot more severe.
Yeah, so significant level concussions.
So
that,
I don't.
A number of them apparently are still suffering from.
Yes. So, you know, so we really don't know how strong that response was from Iran, but
well, you know, Democrats in Congress, and I'll say a growing number of Republicans, are wary about getting bogged down in a new Middle East conflict with Iran, and they've sought to require this president and future presidents to seek authorization for future uses of military force there. Now, the president has threatened to veto both the measures passed by the House, the 2002 military force authorization, separate from the more expansive resolution passed in 2001, right after the September 11th attacks. That resolution authorizes force against all those who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the individuals who coordinated those strikes. The 2001 resolution has been used as an authority for 41 operations in 19 countries. That's according to a 2019 report by the Friends Committee on National Legislation. The 2002 resolution was used as an alternative statutory basis by the Obama war machine for the campaign against ISIS, and by the Trump administration to assert authority for the use of force in Syria or elsewhere?
Well, you know, it's what I don't understand, Dave, is most likely this isn't going to get, it's not going to become law. And what I don't understand is any attempt at war should supposed to go through Congress anyway. We've seen all of them abuse it, no matter what administration. They've abused it somehow, some way. And so it's, so why do they waste their time? I mean, why is time wasted on this? And you know, it's not going to, he's going to veto it. The Senate's not going to pass it. So well, what's the point? Why don't they go on and do something that's more important?
The point is that they're trying to send a signal that the separation of powers matters, that laws matter. And, I mean, they're not the only Congress, and this isn't the only administration that, you know, where this has been an issue. I mean, the last congressional declaration of war was in 1942 against Romania. Now, you know, I don't, even though it amounts to a waste of time in some respects at the, you know, at the end of the day when it either dies in the Senate or is vetoed by the White House, I still think it's important every now and then for, you know, one branch or the other to send a signal, not necessarily to the other branches, but to the American people.
But my point is they never do it when it would be passed. You know, and we see the same thing, and I'll be, you know, critical of President Trump, but we see this in every administration. I mean, he had a Republican Congress and Senate, and a House and Senate, and there was things he could have passed with a breeze. But they don't even dare touch it. And then when they know they can't get it done, then all of a sudden, you know, oh, well, you know, it's their fault because we can't get it done and so forth. Well, you know, you could have done it 3 years ago. It would have went right through. And you see it happen all the time. It's just, I guess this is one of those times when you could just say it's just politics. But to me, it's just... You know, and again, that's probably why, you know, Congress has one of the lowest ratings it's ever had, you know, because, you know, they're just speaking of a little bit of Iran and war. What about Turkey escalating the Syrian conflict?
Jeez. Well, Turkey deployed F-16 fighter jets against government forces in northwestern Syria today. It's a sharp escalation of the conflict there after six Turkish soldiers were killed by artillery strikes. Turkey's President Recep Erdogan said that as many as 35 Syrian troops had been, in his words, neutralized. There were also reports on social media of at least eight civilian deaths when a minibus was struck, presumably unintentionally. Erdogan warned Russia, which backs the Syrian government and which controls the airspace in western Syria, not to prevent Turkey from retaliating. Erdogan, we know, has met frequently with Vladimir Putin to discuss Syria, and in particular the thorny problem of the Idlib province, which we've talked about before, which Moscow wants to bring under Syrian government control in order to declare victory in that war.
How did you like my response on that one?
Yeah, it's all about the volatility, ladies and gentlemen. You know, to the extent, volatility is an interesting thing. I've got to think this through sometime and maybe write about it. Someone once asked me, well, is it volatility if you don't know about it? Isn't ignorance bliss? Well, that's a dangerous thing, I believe. I mean, violence is going on in any given spot in the world. We'll take the Russian, the Turkey airstrike we just mentioned. And that's happening regardless whether or not we know it. We just feel that it's our job to make sure you know about it. Many cases, we don't take a position necessarily. A lot of times we do. But we think it's important to at least get the news out there as we see it, with truth and honesty, and then you can make up your minds how it affects your life, how it affects your psyche, your mentality, in terms of what you're going to invest in and when. We think that events like this, I was going to have today's newsletter article, and I'll do it for Friday. It's going to start listing all of the areas of the world, incidents, events going on in the world today that have led to growing geopolitical volatility. And, you could talk just mainly about the top three, top five, top 10. Unfortunately, you can go to the top 15, the top 20, 25, and then some, and still wonder if you're just at the edge of the iceberg, Melody. Wow. And that's just geopolitical conflict. I mean, we're not talking about all these economic uncertainties that you and I talk about and Butch Paul all the time.
And you know what? There's one that it's been a while since I even mentioned, and that's Yemen.
Yeah.
And of course, we're going to talk a little bit about Israel and so forth coming up. I saw headlines where we had the Palestinian Authority, they're cutting ties with Israel and the U.S. I mean, that area over there is just going to explode. Yemeni al-Qaeda claims Pensacola shooting. You're right. I mean, it's just everywhere, and no one's really paying any attention to it. And
well, there were these. I don't know if that article talks about this U.S. drone strike over the weekend that reportedly has killed a number of al-Qaeda militants, including top al-Qaeda leader Qasem al-Rimi. The tribal leaders there said the drone strike took place in an area known as a stronghold for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That's what do they call themselves? ACAP, A-Q-A-P. It's the Yemeni affiliate of al-Qaeda, or if you prefer, al-Qaeda. It was not immediately clear how many militants were in the building at the time, but the tribal leader said a handful of the militants arrived at the area directly after the strike and cordoned off the area. So it's al-Rimi, who was reportedly killed, is known for his charisma and how beloved he was across that a terrorist community. ACAP has long been considered the global network's on the U.S. mainland.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things going on, Dave, and it's all related. It's so interwoven and so dangerous. It's so dangerous. What about the Libyan arms embargo? There was a 13-page UN report that was published last week, described the detail of the July bombing of the detention center near Tripoli. It killed 53 people. The report conspicuously failed to do, though, was identify the perpetrator, a foreign state, investigators concluded. The UN's reluctance to identify or even hint at who was behind the bombing is symptomatic, analysts say, of the weakness of its 9-year-old arms embargo on Libya. So it's an embargo so widely flouted that the body's envoy to Libya last year said that it risked becoming a cynical joke.
Yeah.
You know? There's at least 6 foreign nations that are fueling the mayhem in Libya, supplying weapons, mercenaries, military advisors to rival factions battling for control of the oil-rich country. But, you know, none of these outside actors have been ever held to account. So what else is new?
Yeah, boy, it's hard to believe it's been 9 years. Yeah. 9 years since the demise of Gaddafi. Apparently, the foreign state behind this attack was the UAE, United Arab Emirates.
Of course.
It's an American ally and the main backer of the controversial military commander over there, Khalifa Haftar. The Emirates also perhaps the most egregious violator of the embargo that was imposed in 2011. As Libya plunged into civil war after the ouster of Gaddafi.
We're out of time, Dave.
I think Take your blood pressure, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Dave. It's good to be back, and I will return tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet. This is the Global Star Radio Network.